Q and Review, celebrating 40 years of audio production, welcomes you to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Recorded from our studio in the Bishopriggs Media Centre and by our volunteers working from home. Keep up to date with Q and Review news via our Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at Q and Review. That's @CUEANDREVIEW. Or get in touch with us directly by emailing information@qandreview.com. That's information@CUEANDREVIEW.com. Or by calling us on 0141 772 3979. Please like and share our podcast and give us constructive feedback.
Evening Times Sport, March 26. 3G pitches ban could harm provision of sports facilities. Report by Vicky Allen. The synthetic pitch industry has hit back against a report calling for a ban on 3G rubber crumb pitches, saying that it would seriously harm the provision of sports facilities across the country. The report by Professor Andrew Watterson of the University of Stirling, due to be published this week, says a tougher precautionary and prevention strategy is essential to protect users of all ages, the public, and workers who make, maintain and dispose of the crumb. Stefan Diderich, Director General and CEO at EMEA Synthetic Turf Council, ESTC, responded to the report by highlighting that synthetic sports pitches not only benefit the physical and mental health of thousands of people, but also aid the development of the country's most popular sports. And he said, the suggestion that 3G pitches should be banned across Scotland ignores two very important factors. The first is that a number of independent scientific studies have shown there to be no health risks associated with European-sourced rubber infill, with a major pan-European study having taken place in the last 4 years. And he also pointed out the European Commission's decision to ban the sale of synthetic and recycled infill, such as ELT rubber, from 2031, is part of a wider environmental strategy to reduce microplastics. The same rules also apply to other product categories such as cosmetics and detergents, and have nothing to do with any potential health concerns. We fully support the use of sustainable alternatives to granular rubber infill, with a number of natural infills such as cork, processed olive stones and wood chip already available on today's market. One of these crumb infill studies is a 2020 European-wide piece of research that looked into the concerns that exposure to end-of-life tyre, ELT-derived rubber granules, used on sports fields might pose to human health. It concluded that cancer risk for exposure to polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs, were below 1 to 1 million and found no health concerns for synthetic turfs with ELT-derived infill. However, Professor Watterson described this paper as dated and limited to PAHs, and he said it ignored many of the almost 200 other possible carcinogens that the 2019 study evolution of potential carcinogenicity of organic chemicals in synthetic tough crumb rubber found in crumbs. The problem with crumb also relates to endocrine disruptors and reproductive hazards. There is no safe level, for example, for known carcinogens, only acceptable risk levels. This usually means industry and regulators decide what is okay for those who run the risk of exposure, the public and workers. Professor Watterson also described the European Union decision on microplastics and infill as clearly due to health and environment concerns. The EU regulation, for instance, mentions concerns about their general impact on the environment and potentially on human health. Because of the number of chemicals found in microplastics, like crumb rubber, increasingly scientists are advocating for the wider banning of products rather than individual chemicals within them, since the process of studying them and calculating risk to health is a long and difficult one, and the EU approach represents a way of tackling that challenge. The scale of the problem of crumb rubber is highlighted by the EU regulation, which says, infill material for use on synthetic turf sports surfaces is the largest contributor in terms of use of microplastics in prosthetics, as well as the largest source of environmental emissions of intentionally present synthetic polymer microparticles at European level. The EU regulation gives field owners 8 years to make the transition away from end-of-life tyre infill. Professor Watterson has urged the Scottish and UK governments to stop procrastinating and deliver their own ban. One of his concerns is that if the UK does not mirror the EU's ban, which is due to come into play in 2031, crumb rubber manufacturers will view the UK as a dumping ground. He is also concerned that some Scottish bodies are looking to the ESTC for guidance, and he says the reliance on an industry making, selling or installing artificial turf pitches for risk assessments of their products should always be balanced by independent sources. A Scottish Government spokesperson said, "We work closely with Sports Scotland and the Sports Pitch Construction Association and its code of practice, which acknowledges the difficulty in trying to balance the health and well-being benefits that come from the use of 3G pitches with environmental sustainability factors. There are currently no widely available alternative infill products with proven durability on the market that are as effective, suitable for all UK weather conditions, and deliver the required performance standards. At least 95% of the material in use falls within the limits set in restriction under EU REACH." However, Professor Watterson pointed out that alternative infills are increasingly available and that 95% only covers a limited number of chemicals in the crumb, not all its hazardous chemicals. And Professor Watterson added, "Natural grass already provides an alternative, but will not keep crumb rubber manufacturers and 3G pitch installers in business or profit. In the meantime, the UK synthetic pitch industry looks as if it may be able to continue selling its products in the UK without let or hindrance when a just transition policy should be adopted now." Report by Vicky Allen. Evening Times Sport, March 26, Glasgow Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach trains new generation. Report by Morgan Carmichael. A mixed martial arts gym in Glasgow has brought a groundbreaking initiative to their premises in the north of the city. The Grip House, based in Postle Park, has welcomed champion fighters and big-time winners through its doors since opening in 2005. And through the Grip House Academy, which holds kids and teens classes, the gym is hoping to be the starting point for future stars in the making, especially with the launch of their new Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu classes for youngsters aged 4.5 to 16, which runs 6 days a week. Nathaniel Montgomery, head coach for the Grip House Academy, told the Glasgow Times, "We are the first Jiu-Jitsu gym in Scotland, offering a six-day-a-week program for kids. No other gym in the country is doing that. You find that most gyms house one or two classes for kids, but we want to make the sport as accessible for young kids as possible. A lot of gyms offer kids classes as an afterthought. Kids can be so limited for opportunity, so it is great that we can open it up and expose the sport to a wider range of children." The move comes after the team at the Grip House Academy noticed a significant growth in kids wanting to take part in the sport. Nathaniel explained, "We used to put on about two classes a week, and that can go for about 5 years. But now we're seeing the team constantly expanding. We have more kids wanting to train and more competing at an international level. We never thought we would see the interest get as big as it did. It was just something that we never expected." And Nathaniel has claimed that the classes, which have seen kids travel from as far as Inverness, are already making a difference despite only launching a month ago. And he confessed, "The classes are making a difference. We are already seeing the kids evolve and become more confident. The amount of them who have started so nervous and shy and have since completely come out of their shell, it is helping kids at school be more confident." Nathaniel and the team hope that the classes will help kids defend themselves and compete against the best in the world and win. In a typical class, kids can expect to warm up with some jiu-jitsu games, learn some moves in depth, and spar with a partner. The classes are ASN friendly, and toddler jiu-jitsu classes will be set up in due course for little ones aged between 2.5 and 4.5 years. The Grip House Academy have low income support available for their classes. Evening Times Sport, March 26. Nick Roger on John Ram reflecting on what he's missing as Masters looms. "You will probably not be interested in the slightest to know that I do enjoy cooking. Saying that, I bet this modest revelation has now got you thinking. I reckon you'll be sitting there and imagining me in the throes of culinary endeavour, gently mopping my brow with a dishclout as I delicately place a couple of sauteed partridge breast fillets on top of an elegantly constructed tower of seasonal vegetables, while furnishing the plate with strategic skid marks of tarragon just to finish with a flourish. Either that, or you're just envisaging a ham-fisted nincompoop whose idea of pioneering gastronomic adventure is tossing some hand-torn basil over a bloomin' pot noodle. Yes, I thought that would be the case. Anyway, this cuisine-related meander was sparked by the unveiling last week of John Ram's menu for the Champions dinner ahead of the Masters. I don't know about you, but as far as I'm concerned, the level of oohing and aahing that's now generated by some grub served up to a few fellows in green jackets is about as nonsensical as the fawning coochie-cooing that goes on during the utterly unwatchable Par 3 contest. Ah, those cherished dewy-eyed Masters tradition. In this age of relentless, all-consuming coverage of this, that and the other, you half expect to press the red button on your TV remote control during tournament week and find a channel dedicated entirely to the champion's dinner, with the great Jim Nantz providing a running commentary of whispering reverence as Larry Mize slaughters some of Mama Ram's classic lentil stew down his tie. Mama Ram's stew, by the way, is on the menu along with a variety of other tasty tapas, a Basque crab salad, a chunk of ribeye and some turbot with white asparagus. It sounds like something this correspondent would rustle up when I cannot be bothered to do my signature pot noodle. But let's move on. If the Masters menu tickled your taste buds, then Ram's own words provided plenty of food for thought. Absent from a rip-roaring Players' Championship the other week due to his defection to LIV Golf, and unable to defend his American Express and Genesis Invitational titles already this season because of his PGA Tour suspension, Ram spoke candidly about what he was missing. He said, "I'm not going to lie. For everybody who said this would be easy, some things have been, but not being able to defend some titles that mean a lot to me has not. I still watch golf because I love watching it. It's hard not being there, but it's done. It's in the past. Joining LIV is a decision I made, and I'm comfortable with it, but I'm hoping I can come back." As the Spaniard spoke on a media teleconference, there was a wistfulness to his words, a sense of yearning that could have been accompanied by the melancholic piano arrangement at the end of an old episode of The Hulk, when Dr. David Banner walked off into the sunset. Of course, plenty of observers will say, "Boo-hoo, you knew what you were getting yourself into when £450 million was shoved in your face by the Saudis," or words to that effect. Sympathy in many quarters will be in short supply. The idea, though, of the reigning Masters champion watching the PGA Tour's flagship event unravelling at Sawgrass on the TV remains a peculiar reality of these fractured times. Eamon Lynch, the Golf Channel broadcaster and Golf Week columnist, made a shrewd observation about Ram's views on a recent LIV event in Hong Kong. "Ram praised the people and the food," wrote Lynch. "He is a competitor reduced to a concierge." For a fierce competitor like Ram, who revels in the cut and thrust of championship golf and thrives in the atmosphere of the big occasion, those kind of cutting barbs are a sobering reminder of what he has sacrificed. Regardless of all the millions that have been tossed his way, there must be a huge feeling of unfulfillment. Here he is, competing in 54 hole events, in front of relatively sparse crowds, with music playing in the background, and with a reduced media presence, while his old peers on the PGA Tour are going toe-to-toe in a thrilling finish to a Players' Championship that went right down to the wire. Money can buy you a lot of things, but what would Ram have given to be involved in a finale like that? LIV's signing of Ram was a mighty coup. In many ways, we thought it would be a watershed moment for the men's game, a tipping point that would bring an end to all the poaching and the defections, help restore some order, and accelerate the move towards a united front in the splintered upper echelons. There's still a heck of a sorting out to do, though. The journey towards a peace deal continues to be a long and winding road. Said Ram, I just want to see the best in the world being able to compete against the best in the world again. The world number three will get his own chance to do that at the Masters and in the rest of the majors. Away from those big four events, though, he'll still be an outsider looking in. Perhaps Ram's Champions Dinner menu should have included some humble pie, says Nick Roger. Evening Times Sport, March 26. Manchester United great on the superpower that's made Scott McTominay a star. Report by Matthew Lindsay. In the 13 seasons that he spent in the first team at his boyhood heroes Manchester United, Wes Brown won the Premier League 5 times, lifted the Champions League twice, and made 23 appearances for England. The versatile player, who was equally comfortable playing at centre-half or right-back, was dubbed the long-sight liberal by adoring supporters of the Old Trafford club because of his cultured displays at the back, at home and abroad. Yet there was one skill which always, despite his repeated attempts to master the art, eluded him during his illustrious playing days. Said Brown, in training for 12 or 13 years, I was always trying to perfect the timing of my runs into the box. But believe me, as I found out, you're definitely born with it. Paul Scholes was good at it, and you'd have to say that one of the very best at it was Frank Lampard. His timing was fantastic. His goal-scoring record was fantastic. Brown knows it is a God-given gift which Scott McTominay possesses in abundance, having witnessed the Lancaster-born player net important goals for both United and Scotland from midfield in the past couple of seasons. In fact, he feels it is why the 48 times capped 27-year-old, who netted on no fewer than 7 occasions in the Euro 2024 qualifying campaign, has put his difficult spell at his club behind him and established himself as a first-team regular. And he said, you do feel watching Scott and the way he runs into the box that he's definitely got that ability, 100%. The thing people have never understood about Scott is that he's always had the right energy, right commitment. He's doing that for Scotland, but for me, he's always done that for Man United. I just feel now we've finally worked out where he's best playing. That's a little more of an attacking midfielder. I'm not going to lie. When I first saw Scott play, I look at him and his physique and think he's the perfect body type. Tall, strong, slim, fast, athletic for a central defender or holding midfielder. He can certainly do that. But what we've learned over this season is that his timing of runs into the box and his willingness to make runs into, plus his scoring ability, makes him a threat. I think we've only just worked that out, if I'm quite honest. So does United manager Erik ten Hag have his Scotland counterpart Steve Clarke to thank for transforming the man who was named the Scottish Football Writers Association International Player of the Year on Sunday from a defensive footballer into an attacking one? And Brown said, yes, I do, because he's been in that position with Scotland fans aren't shocked. They're now thinking, OK, Scott can play higher. When Scott first got into the team, it was all about him holding. That's fair enough. But I feel he's more effective running into the space and timing his runs into the box which is one of the hardest things in football to do. What you will know, Scott always gives 100%, whether it's for Scotland or Man United. We see it week in, week out, tracking back, tackling, everything. Scott's from the youth team, so he gets it. He's passionate as well. But I just feel a little bit more has come out of him as a player. Another year's experience. That attacking sort of part, a lot of fans have been surprised with. So did England miss out by not capping McTominay before Scotland, who will take on Northern Ireland at Hampden in an international friendly this evening? Did England miss out back in 2018? Brown knows there was never any prospect of getting a player who qualifies to play for this country through a father who hails from Helensburgh to pledge his international allegiances to the land of his birth. And he said, if you ask Scott, he'd say he was Scottish. He wants to play for Scotland. There's probably many players who have got two sides where they can go either way. But he's Scottish and he's a proud Scot as well. It would be like me asking Darren Fletcher if he wanted to play for England. He would tell me to do one. The main thing for me is that Scott's a great lad, and speaking as a fan as well, he gives it everything, every game. I'm sure he does that for Scotland. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, March 27. Former Rangers captain delighted at Davy Cooper statue restoration. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Former Rangers captain Davy McKinnon has welcomed the refurbishment of Davy Cooper's statue in the grounds of Hamilton Palace and paid a glowing tribute to the 189,000 people who backed an appeal to restore the memorial to its former condition. The bronze statue was erected in honour of the Scottish football great in his hometown of Hamilton by South Lanarkshire Council back in 1999, 4 years after his death from a brain haemorrhage at the age of just 39. McKinnon, who played alongside the former Clydebank, Rangers, Motherwell and Scotland winger at Ibrox in the 1980s, was upset at the state of disrepair it had fallen into and posted a picture and a video on a social media website last month. That prompted calls to clean up the statue and plaque from across the globe. They were spotted by council representatives and immediate action was taken. The renovation work was completed just days before the 29th anniversary of Cooper's passing on March 23, 1995. McKinnon, former Rangers and Scotland midfielder Derek Ferguson, and council leader Joe Fagan inspected the work, which has been carried out at Hamilton Palace. And McKinnon said, a lot of the guys who played with Coop are in a WhatsApp group and we talk about him. We also individually come and see him and talk to him every so often. I probably come about 3 or 4 times a year to see him and talk. When I see that statue, I think of the spirit of Coop. About a month ago, I was going to a charity event in Bells Hill, and I thought it was a great opportunity to come and see Coop. I saw that the statue, the plaque in particular, was in a state of disrepair. I thought, no, this is not on. I thought it was up to the guys who loved and respected him as a guy and as a player to get it sorted. So I put a video and a photo on social media, and 189,000 people responded to it. From across football, Rangers supporters, Celtic supporters, Motherwell supporters, people from out with the country, they all said it should be sorted. To be fair, that is what prompted the council to sort it. It is incredible that the power of all those people got it sorted. It is also great credit to the good people at the council. Thank you on behalf of everyone who showed their interest. Davy's family will be delighted. Ferguson said, "He was my hero and I loved him to bits. Even before I signed for Rangers, I went and watched Rangers sitting in the centenary stand. I went because of Coop. I wanted to be like him, just like the other guys. I was never going to be like him, but I tried. Then the next thing I'm training with him and playing first team with him. That was surreal. In terms of his touch and control, what a player. But he always had time for the younger ones. He was portrayed in the media as the moody blue. But with us, he wasn't like that at all. I won't say which other ones, but some of them didn't have time for you, either at Ibrox or at training. For him to go at 39 was just tragic. He'd just started coaching and he'd have been a brilliant coach. If you were having a 1-2-1 with him, it would have been like gold dust. The likes of Ian Durant, Robert Flack and myself, we all had them with him. I love where the statue is because I know he loved it down here." Councillor Fagan said, "I'm delighted we have been able to restore this statue, recognising the life of one of our area's most famous sons. It was unveiled 25 years ago, and inevitably time has had an impact on the studio, on the statue and its signage. So it is great to see the overhaul of the statue and its surrounding area. A big thank you must go to the council's grounds services team for all their hard work returning the bronze statue to its former glory." Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, March 27. Two executives behind vindictive Celtic call named by Green Brigade. Report by David Irvin. The Green Brigade have named Celtic executives Michael Nicholson and Chris Mackay as behind the vindictive action to refuse to allow the Celtic end. The fan group released a stinging statement today claiming efforts to facilitate the Celtic end for the upcoming women's match against Hearts next month have been unsuccessful. Celtic women take on Hearts at Parkhead on Sunday, April 21, and the fan group wanted to recreate the Celtic end with a packed section in the Jockstein stand to back the team. However, the request has been booted out with the group slamming the shameful decision and announcing they would not attend the match as a result. The group claim Nicholson and Mackay have made the decision. The group state that the refusal to facilitate the Celtic end comes in stark contrast to the fixture last month where a record crowd attended and fan representatives worked constructively with the club. The lengthy statement read, "Despite our best intentions and efforts, the club has refused to facilitate the Celtic end for the upcoming Celtic Football Club women matches at Celtic Park. This is in stark contrast to similar matches last May, where fan representatives worked constructively with the club to promote the matches and draw record crowds. This decision has been taken by Michael Nicholson, CEO, and Chris Mackay, CFO. It is vindictive against the concept of the Celtic end, the fan groups behind the idea, and the thousands of fans who want to see some level of consideration given to a goal end standing section to rejuvenate a stale Celtic Park. Shamefully, Nicholson and Mackay would prefer for Celtic FC women to be detrimented than have another positive advert for the Celtic end. Ironically, this decision contradicts the club's statement following the cancellation of away tickets at the recent SWPL Glasgow Derby, which decried others undermining the promotion and progress of the women's game. At a critical time in both the men's and women's seasons, we have no desire to engage in a public spat which may distract positive support for both teams. For this reason, as well as for unreasonable obstacles, it is regrettable that we will not attend the upcoming Celtic FC women matches at Celtic Park. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, March 27. Rodgers really pleased as Celtic ace shines on loan. Report by David Irvin. Brendan Rodgers has revealed he has been left really pleased with Celtic midfielder Kwon's move to St Mirren. The Celtic manager sanctioned a move to Paisley until the end of the season, with Kwon unable to break into the first team at Parkhead. However, Kwon has quickly impressed at St Mirren, so much so that Stephen Robinson is already hopeful of an extended deal to keep Kwon beyond the summer. And Rodgers hailed Kwon as a talented player as he offered his verdict on the Korean midfielder's move to St Mirren so far. Said Rodgers, "Again, it's an opportunity to go and play. We are really pleased. I spoke to Stephen. He needed game time with the squad being too big here. He is a talented player, and hopefully he has gone and shown that, and the guys are really delighted with him there." Robinson has already opened discussions with Celtic over an extended loan deal for Kwon, but admits the final decision will come down to Parkhead Chiefs. The Paisley boss previously said, "He is someone we'd really like to keep. We're speaking to Celtic about it, perhaps keeping him for another season with ourselves. We'd be very keen to do that, but he isn't our player and that won't be our decision. We knew he would have an influence. It was about getting him game time. He came to the country and has not played a lot. It's something we'd be very keen to get done. It's possibly a long way off happening, but that would be an ideal world for me." Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, March 27. Scotland must shore up leaky defence. Report by Ewan Payton. Liam Cooper has called on Scotland to shore up its defence. The Leeds United captain started for Steve Clarke's side as they were defeated 1-0 at home to Northern Ireland. Conor Bradley's deflected strike in the first half was enough to settle the friendly contest at Hampden, and in truth it was no less than the visitors deserved. Scotland never got going and were as toothless up top as they were sloppy at the back, and it is an issue that Cooper insists needs to be sorted as a matter of urgency heading into Euro 2024 this summer. "We're gutted," the 32-year-old said. "It's not the camp we wanted. It was a disappointing result, and we've got to be ready come June. We'd rather get those performances out of the way now. I do not think we've become a bad team overnight, but we've got to improve. I'm sure we will, and come May, when we're back together, we've got to be ready to go, as this game waits for nobody. We have got to stop conceding goals. We prided ourselves on that during the qualifying campaign. I think that's 19 goals in 7 games. The gaffer has been onto us all week saying, that's not us. It's not the team we want to be. We've got to step up to the plate and take responsibility on the pitch. We've got a lot of leaders in that dressing room. You're never too far from turning it around. We've got to get back to ourselves and quickly. Asked how the team goes about fixing the current issues, the defender responded, "It's difficult. It's not like club football when you get every day to work on things, but we've got to snap out of it. It's got to be pedal to the floor and keep working hard. We will try to get back to what we're used to, which is conceding fewer goals and taking our chances when they come. Ideally, you want every camp to be a good camp. It's not gone that way. We've just got to get back to ourselves. We've got a lot of top quality, and come May, we must be ready to hit the ground running." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, March 27. Clark says, "June is the time to peak." Report by Ewan Payton. Steve Clark insists the time for Scotland to peak is in June. The national team coach was disappointed after his side lost 1-0 to Northern Ireland at Hampden last night. However, the 60-year-old refused to get too low in his typical sort of fashion, as he pointed out that the time for the team to turn up is still months ahead. Asked about the performance, he said, "Yeah, okay, decent, moved the ball. We had to create a little bit more in the final third. We had a lot of the ball. We played against a very good, very organised Northern Ireland team. They got the deflection for the goal to give them a platform to defend even more than what they were before, and they were good on the night. We didn't quite create enough to get the goals back. Sometimes in the bad moments you learn more, so let's see where we're at. You learn a lot about your players, team, and what you're going to do in the summer. The time for us to peak is in June. I do not see signs that things are going terribly wrong. Football games can be decided on small margins. Tonight was decided on a small margin. We have to look at ourselves, try to be better, and move on to the next games. We will have a little chat after the game. I definitely won't speak to them en masse until we're back together in June. That's the next time we'll speak." Andy Robertson rolled his ankle during the first half of the friendly encounter. It's a worry for the defender ahead of the title racing with Liverpool in the months ahead, but also with the European Championships commencing in around 11 weeks. Clark said, "He's obviously come off with an injury, so we'll assess it and see how he is. He'll go back to his club and they'll look after him." Then asked what his hope is for the next international camp, he added, "Everybody fit and well, ready to go. That's it. Short, sharp and simple. I'll watch games and I'll get my selection. Hopefully I make the right selection, and hopefully I've got a full squad of players to choose from. Then we go to the tournament." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, March 27. Scotland prop WP Nell to hang boots up. Scotland and Edinburgh prop WP Nell is said to retire at the end of the season. The 37-year-old Nell has racked up 61 international caps and 200 appearances for the capital club since arriving from South Africa in 2012. The experienced tight head, who qualified for Scotland after 3 years of residency, was a front row fixture at three World Cups, 2015, 2019 and 2023. And he said, "To have the opportunity to play for Scotland is something I am incredibly proud of. The memories in the jersey are unbelievable. When you stand there singing the anthem, it's a moment to be proud of, to be part of a team that will represent Scotland." Gregor Townsend, the Scotland head coach, hailed the veteran's contribution to his adopted country and said, WP will rank amongst the best props to play for Scotland, highly respected from coaches and players alike, and he also had a brilliant sense of humour. WP has given a huge amount to Scottish rugby over a number of years. He was a joy to coach, as every time he took to the training pitch, he gave it his all, no matter how much his body was giving him issues. We'll miss his smile, his love of the scrum, and some very skillful moments that often lit up our training sessions. We wish him all the best for the rest of the season and in his retirement. Edinburgh head coach Sean Everett joined the chorus of appreciation, adding, WP has been a tremendous servant to Edinburgh rugby over more than a decade. He's one of only three double centurions in the club's 150-year history and has made 61 appearances for the Scotland national team in an incredibly tough position. I know he'll continue to give everything to the jersey, as he always does, for the remainder of the season. Evening Times Sport, March 27. Rangers daft WWE star brands Southgate idiot over Butland snob. Report by PA. WWE superstar Drew McIntyre has branded Gareth Southgate a bloody idiot after leaving Jack Butland out of the England squad. The Rangers daft wrestler called out the England boss after Butland was overlooked for a call-up twice during this international break. Despite speculation, Butland had earned a return to the international fold. He was left out of the initial squad in favour of Sam Johnston, Aaron Ramsdale and Jordan Pickford. Then, when Johnston pulled out through injury, Burnley's James Trafford was added to the squad, with the Rangers keeper not drafted in. Now, grappler McIntyre has sent a fierce message to Southgate on the That's Football postcard. He said, they're idiots for leaving him out of the squad. He is, along with the captain Tavernier, our best player. We have been searching for such a long time to replace Alan McGregor in goal. We tried multiple keepers and then had to bring McGregor back. But finally, with Butland, he is the man. He's absolutely on fire. He is, as I say, probably our best player along with Tav. To leave him out of the squad, you're just an idiot, simple as that. You're a bloody idiot. From Drew McIntyre. Further on Butland's impact at Rangers, McIntyre added, he's amazing. I'm blown away by how amazing he's been for us. The whole team right now has so much momentum. In the league, we have got a game in hand, and we're going to get it done. And Butland is a big reason that we have got all this momentum. Report by PA. Evening Times Sport, March 28. Callum McNeill tees up PGA Tour debut. Report by Nick Roger. The haves and the have-nots. While those in the upper echelon of professional golf enjoy the kind of lavish indulgences that used to be the reserve of insane Roman emperors, life at the lower end of the game's food chain can be about as glamorous as a night in a wheelie bin. Chasing the golfing golden carrot can be an expensive, gut-wrenching, heartbreaking trial of mind-mangling futility. What-ifs here, if only there, near misses, bad breaks, and ones that got away everywhere. It can be a sair auld fecht. Golfers, though, are a handy bunch, and you never know when it will be your week or even your day. For the dreamers, the rank and file, the journeymen, the has-beens or the never-have-beens, Monday qualifying for a PGA Tour event still lures them in with that promise of potentially life-changing opportunity and reward. All you need to do is blast one of the best rounds of your career in a nail-nibbling 18-hole shootout that has cutthroat a Sweeney Todd's salon and Bob's your uncle. For Scotsman Callum McNeill, the PGA Tour dream was finally realised at the start of the week when he topped the standings in a Monday qualifier for the $9.1 million Texas Children's Houston Open. The 30-year-old, who is originally from Edinburgh but now resides in the Lone Star State, fired a 6-under-66 at the Westwood Golf Club in Houston to grab one of just four tee times that were on offer for the main event. If you want to understand a little bit about what it all meant to McNeill, then have a kick at the brief clip of him on the PGA Tour's website mulling over the magnitude of the moment. The levee was about to break on a flood of tears, but he held it together. "It's hard," he said with a gulp as his eyes welled up and he reflected on the general trials and tribulations of those operating in the margins of the professional scene. "You never know how many more chances you're going to get," he said. "There are no guarantees." At a time when money, greed, debate, division and entitlement has left many asking if golf has lost its soul, the magic of a Monday qualifier remains good for the spirits. McNeill has been chipping away at the coalface for so long, his wedge is just about covered in a thin layer of soot. Today, though, he'll get the reward for his labours when he takes to the tee for a PGA Tour debut in his adopted home state. The grind has been worth it. McNeill, who had a spell working at the Renaissance Club near Gullan, had been an assistant pro at the clubs at Houston Oaks, but his desire to be a touring player never left him. Financing a full-time playing career, however, cannot be achieved with a quick rummage down the back of the clubhouse coach. Step forward, Hal Sutton, the former United States Ryder Cup captain and major winner, who took McNeill under his wing, nurtured the Scots game, and helped him source some much-needed sponsorship. Said McNeill, "Hal briefly worked at the club I worked at in Houston. We got on really well, and he offered to mentor me. Hal said that if I wanted to go for it, it had to be a full-time job. At the time, I was working to pay the rent and trying to play. I had a conditional status on the Latin American tour, managed to raise some sponsorship, and went full-time. I've worked at Houston Oaks for 8 years, and a lot of people here have helped me, so without them, I wouldn't be able to do this. I've just been grinding. It's really expensive doing this, but I know I'm capable, I'm good enough, I believe in myself. Hopefully, I can find the means to keep it going." The Monday qualifier was something of a family affair, as McNeill's cousin Cameron acted as caddy while over in the United States on holiday with his wife and daughter. He was due to fly back before the actual tournament. "I might have to change my flight now, so I think I'll be putting it on the credit card and staying for the duration," said Cameron, who will watch on from the sidelines. As for McNeill, well, he's set to take flight in the first class of the PGA Tour. Report by Nick Roger. Evening Times Sport, March 28. Green Brigade permitted Celtic Park entry for women's clash. report by Ewan Payton. Celtic have revealed that the Green Brigade will be permitted entry to watch the women's team take on Hearts next month. The Ultras group had accused the club of being vindictive after they were denied access to the Jockstein stand to recreate the Celtic end for the crucial upcoming Scottish Women's Premier League encounter. The Green Brigade had hoped to fill out the lower tier of the stand behind the goal, much like they did last May, to cheer Elena Sadiku's side on as they compete for the title with Rangers and Glasgow City. However, they have now planned on boycotting the match against Hearts on Sunday, April 21, after being denied entry to this area of the stadium, taking aim at CEO Michael Nicholson and CFO Chris Mackay in particular. Now Celtic have confirmed that the group has always been permitted entry to the game, but this will be in the rail seating section where the Green Brigade is usually housed. A club spokesperson said, "The group was made aware that the Jockstein would not be made available due to certain safety concerns relating to this specific area, but arrangements have been made by the club to allow the group to attend within the rail seating section. This has been communicated to the group, and the club hopes that as many supporters and supporter groups as possible come along to support Celtic women at the upcoming Celtic Park matches, as well as all other matches." Evening Times Sport, March 28. Groundsman crossing the Dundee Divide. Report by Ewan Payton. "Very few players have done it, but when it comes to backroom staff, people can be easily forgiven for crossing the city divide. That's exactly what is happening in Dundee as the Dens Park club look to solve their pitch issues. The Dark Blues are currently being investigated by the SPFL after their pitch led to 4 postponements in the City of Discovery this season. The latest was a little under 2 weeks ago, prior to the international break, when their live Sky TV clash with Rangers was called off less than 2 hours before kickoff. Dundee's long-standing groundsman Brian Robertson and his son, also named Brian, were dismissed earlier this season. Now they have taken the first steps to fixing the pitch woes by snapping up Dundee United's groundsman Paul Murray. It is understood Murray has handed in his notice at Tannadice and will begin working at Dens, famously situated on the same road, in the summer. In the meantime, Dundee has enlisted the help of Premier League partners Burnley and specialist turf company All Grass to keep on top of their pitch problems. It's an away game up next for Tony Docherty's side this weekend, as they make the short trip to Perth to face St Johnstone. Jordan McGee is back in contention for the visitors, something that pleased manager Tony Docherty no end." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, March 28. Huge Celtic injury boost. Report by Ewan Payton. Callum McGregor's return to the Celtic team is imminent, according to Brendan Rodgers. The midfielder picked up a knock in training and missed recent matches against Hearts and Livingston earlier this month. The Achilles and calf issues kept him out of those games. However, he is expected to come straight back into Rodgers' starting lineup in West Lothian this Sunday. Rumours surfaced online that the Scottish international would be ruled out for the remainder of the season with the injury problem. However, speaking to the club's own TV channel, Rogers moved to dispel that speculation, instead offering a positive update on his impending return. He said, "With Cameron Carter-Vickers now back to fitness, and the imminent return of our captain Callum McGregor, and instrumental midfielder Rio Hatate, this could make a big difference." Rogers was then asked how important it is to have all his key players back for the title run-in, and he responded, "Of course, it's great if they're available. Each one is obviously different, but when they have that know-how and experience with how to deal with a title run-in, then that can be key. I think the three players mentioned are obviously hugely influential players for the team, so it will be great to have them back and available. We played Livingston recently. Attacking-wise, we were very good in the game, but we gave away too much for my liking. So our mentality and focus is to go and play to the level of the game that we want to play, but make sure that we don't give much up in terms of opportunities and space. If we can do that, then we could have a very good day. Obviously, with Livingston being at home and on the AstroTurf, they'll maybe be more accustomed to that. Whatever team David Martindale puts out, they are normally battling and working very, very hard. We have seen that." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, March 28. A major Euro 2024 rule change is to be lobbied by Clark and Company. Report by Ewan Payton. A major rule change could be afoot ahead of Euro 2024 this summer. Managers of all 24 nations are set to attend a summit in Dusseldorf next month to lobby the prospect of increasing squads from 23 players to 26. Scotland head coach Steve Clarke will join his international colleagues in Germany for the pre-tournament meeting with UEFA on April 8 and 9. One of the points set for the agenda is the number of players allowed to be selected per country for the championships. Currently, as has been the case for quite some time, 23 players is the squad limit. However, there's a growing consensus among managers that this figure should be increased to 26, the number of players that were permitted for the last Euros, which was hampered by COVID in 2021. It is believed that coaches are keen to explore the possibility of reinstating this ruling, which would see a further three players allowed on the plane to Germany. Gareth Southgate is one of the managers who has publicly backed the idea, and he said, "There is one more UEFA meeting where there's been a little bit of talk among some of the coaches about possibly increasing that. We've got to make the best decisions with what we know, and some of those currently are going to be medical decisions. And we've been able to get those right in the previous tournaments. We've been able to give people time, but with 23, that's definitely more difficult. Andy Robertson is a potential concern heading into the summer, as the Liverpool defender hobbled off against Northern Ireland on Tuesday. He underwent a scan upon his return to Merseyside yesterday, and it is hoped that the 30-year-old has avoided a serious injury. Callum McGregor and Ryan Jack have also dealt with injury issues in recent times, while Grant Hanley and Scott McKenna both pulled out of the most recent camp due to fitness issues." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, March 28. Contact made by European outfit for double Rangers transfer swoop. Report by Ewan Payton. Contact has been made with Rangers for a potential double transfer pursuit this summer, according to a report. It was previously known that European side Trabzonspor were keen to make Borna Barisic one of their first summer signings upon the expiry of his contract at Ibrox this summer. Now it has emerged, the Turkish outfit are eyeing up a swoot for both the Croatian and John Lundstrom at the end of the season. A report in Turkey claims Trabzonspor has made contact over a potential switch for the Scouser, who has just months left on his current deal. The former Sheffield United man has been relaxed when addressing his future publicly, but has hinted that he's open to remaining at Ibrox after playing an integral part under Philippe Clement's revival of the team. No agreement has been struck yet, though, and so the player is free to discuss his future with any interested parties. Meanwhile, Steve Clarke has suggested that Nathan Patterson's Scotland form has suffered because he has not featured regularly for Everton in the Premier League in England this year. However, he has backed the former Rangers right-back to learn invaluable lessons from the costly error he made in the 1-0 defeat to Northern Ireland at Hampden on Tuesday evening. Patterson gave the ball away to Conor Bradley inside his own penalty box in the first half of the game, and the Liverpool youngster fired with a little help of a deflection into the top right corner to open his account at international level. The 6-foot-tall 22-year-old, who started in the matches against the Netherlands and Northern Ireland because Aaron Hickey of Brentford is sidelined with a hamstring injury and has not played since October, has enjoyed some outstanding games in a dark blue jersey in the past. Report by Ewan Payton.
From the Glasgow Times, Monday the 1st of April, from the sports section, ex-ref verdict on controversial Rangers penalty and encroachment call, article by David Irvine. Former Premier League referee Dermot Gallagher has backed the decision to award Rangers a penalty against Hibs, but also the call their goal out. The ex-Whistler branded the decision to award the spot kick absolutely right, but admitted he missed the foul on John Souter in the first instance. Gallagher added that a yellow card for Nectar Triantis was also the right decision after the collision in the box at Ibrox. On Sky Sports Ref Watch, Gallagher explained, "When I saw this I thought really, really harsh, but when I saw the replay when it goes to the VAR, absolutely right. And what I would also say, also a yellow card. Flailing arm catches him in the face. Credit to VAR because when I saw it at first I didn't think foul. When I see the replay, definitely a foul." James Tavernier's penalty was saved by David Marshall, and Scott Trout's rebounded effort, which found the net, was ruled out for encroachment. A VAR review resulted in the goal being chopped off due to Wright being inside the penalty area as the spot kick was taken and then being actively involved in the rebound. On the encroachment call that saw Wright's strike ruled out, Gallagher added, "If he had size 6 boots instead of a size 8, he wouldn't have encroached. But he does just encroach, and because it's him that scores, because this is all about the impact and who impacts on the rebound. If you look at it, it's actually Scott Ryder that's in the box and he scores, so disallowed. This is where there is zero tolerance, isn't it? Once you have VAR there and you can see the line, once his toe is over the line, that is it." And that article was written by David Irvine. From the Glasgow Times, Monday the 1st of April, Sport. Livingston 0, Celtic 3. Instant reaction to the burning issues. Article by Graeme McGarry. Celtic warmed up for their trip to face Rangers at Ibrox next Sunday in fine style as a second half goal rush brushed Livingston aside in West Lothian. The hosts provided a hard defence to crack early on, but Celtic eventually broke their resistance through a Jamie Brandon own goal, and further strikes from substitute Paulo Bernardo and Matt O'Reilly gave their huge travelling support to the Easter Sunday celebration they came for. Here are the talking points from Almondvale as Celtic returned to the top of the Premiership, with their fans loudly proclaiming "Bring on the Rangers" at full time. Rio Hatate impresses upon his return. The Japanese midfielder made his long-awaited return to action for Celtic, his first appearance since early January after injuring his calf playing for his country at the Asian Cup, and it was immediately evident what he brings to the party. The Celtic fans chanted his name loudly from the off, and he was straight into the action, picking up the ball from the backline and quickly passing it forward, bringing a dynamism to the midfield that Brendan Rodgers' side had sorely lacked at times this season in his absence. Some of his penetrative passing was a joy to behold, picking out the runs of Alistair Johnson and Nicholas Coon in behind on the right, and Daisy Maeda on the left. The end product from those areas didn't always match the supply, but Hatate himself almost provided it himself as a frustrating first half for the visitors dragged on, curling her right foot effort just past from the edge of the area. It was no surprise though that he played a central role as Celtic finally broke the deadlock shortly after the break, his shot being saved by Livy keeper Shamal George, and somehow rebounding back into the home net via the hapless Brandon. Hatate's performance was a real fillip for Celtic ahead of next weekend's potentially pivotal Old Firm clash against Rangers, particularly with captain Callum McGregor also poised to meet the game at Ibrox on Sunday. When Hatate was withdrawn to be replaced by Bernardo on the hour, the Celtic crowd around three quarters of the stadium rose to acclaim his showing. The difference that these players make to the Celtic side, as Hatate showed here, is massive. Livy will kick themselves for opener. For all that Celtic fashioned one or two openings in the first half, and felt they may have had a penalty, more on that later, the Livy defence had managed to frustrate the champions for the most part, and had limited them to the most speculative efforts from outside the area. The one real exception came when Kyogo Furuhashi managed to turn Ayu Obelayi inside the area and draw a very decent save from George, but that came back as the clock ticked into stoppage time, and home manager Davy Martindale would have been pleased with how his men had managed to keep Celtic at arm's length for the most part. Unfortunately for them, they blew all their good work shortly after the interval, as some slack play by Stephen Bradley ultimately allowed the visitors to open the scoring. A high cross was lofted towards the back post and, as Bradley attempted to take a touch and shepherd it to safety, Coon was just too sharp for him, nipping in to nick the ball and lay back for Hatate to get the shot away that would end up in the back of the net via a spot of pinball. Martindale went apoplectic on the touchline, berating his man for failing to clear the lines, and from there there was only one winner. Should Celtic have had a penalty? The main talking point of the first half was a potential penalty for Celtic, as Kyogo went down under the challenge of Livy captain Mikey Devlin, the striker stealing in front of the defender as he looked to clear a low cross into the area. Referee Don Robertson waved away the Celtic appeals, and VAR official Alan Muir very quickly dismissed any notion that he would invite his colleague over to the pitch side screen for a second look. It was a bit of a strange one, in truth, with the incident falling into the seen them given and soft variety all at once, and had Robertson awarded the spot kick on the field, then again, it is doubtful that Muir would have deemed it a clear and obvious error and overturned the call. The officials, and the soon-to-be-retiring Crawford Allen, will likely be relieved that Celtic were on to win, and the incident will now be a footnote to the game rather than the main talking point of the next week leading up to next Sunday. Bernardo serves a reminder. Amid the excitement at the imminent returns of Hatate and McGregor, it has been somewhat forgotten just what a vital contribution Bernardo has made to the Celtic side in their absence at points throughout the season. But the Portuguese midfielder didn't take long to serve a reminder of his talents after replacing Hatate. He drove forward from the middle of the park, holding off the close attentions of two Livingston players to fashion a 1-2 with O'Reilly before slamming the ball low into George's bottom right-hand corner from the edge of the box. It was a fine finish, And while it will likely be the first choice trio of McGregor, Hatate and O'Reilly, who will take their place in the midfield at Ibrox, it is unlikely that the first two of those will make it through in the 90 minutes. Rodgers will be reassured that the depth he now has in that area with the likes of Bernardo and Tomiki Iwata, who was also impressive here. O'Reilly back on form and back in the goals. The perception has been that O'Reilly has just come off the boil a little since the January offer from Atletico Madrid that was rebuffed by Celtic, and he came into this one with just one goal in his last 11 matches for the club. He seemed right back at it here though, as well as his assist for Bernardo. He got the goal his performance merited late on to put the icing in the cake for Celtic. Though, George will be disappointed that the ball rather went through him. All in all, it was an encouraging afternoon for Celtic, with their big players finding form ahead of next week's Ibrox showdown. And that report was by Graeme McGarry. From the Glasgow Times, Monday the 1st of April, from the sports section, Rangers 3, Hibernian 1, instant reaction to the burning issues. This article is by Matthew Lindsay. Celtic will be in first place in the Sinks Premiership table when they cross the River Clyde to play Rangers in Govan next Sunday if they beat bottom place Livingston at Hamilton Vale. But the hard-fought Rangers win over Hibernian at Ibrox this afternoon piled the pressure on the defending champions before their visit to West Lothian. James Tavernier, who had just his penalty saved by David Marshall, but Philip Comonk's team ahead in the first half when he buried a volley. His strike made him the highest scoring defender in British football history. Mazin Maolida equalised for Nick Montgomery's side shortly before half time when he prodded beyond Jack Butland from a few yards out. However, the match was not level for long. Serial Dessers gave Rangers the lead again in the 7th minute of added on time when he got in the end of a Todd Cantwell cross and headed it in off the underside of the crossbar. Rabbi Matondo replaced Fabio Silva in the second half and wrapped up the 3 points with 5 minutes of regulation time remaining when he curled a long-range shot beyond Marshall. Here are 5 talking points from a game which saw Rangers, who have a game in hand against Dundee to play, return to top spot and move 2 points ahead of Celtic. VAR spot on. It has been refreshing not listening to any mumps and moans about VAR in the past fortnight, but it took less than half an hour for more gripes about the use of the new technology to arise. Referee David Dickinson failed to spot that Hibs centre-half Nictorious Triantis had elbowed his Rangers counterpart John Souter as the ball came into his area, but VAR official Andrew Dallas over at Clydesdale House did see the offence. He urged his colleague to have a look back at the flashpoint on his pitchside monitor, and a penalty was duly awarded and a yellow card shown. Tavernier had his poorly struck penalty kick, easily saved by Marshall. But Scott Wright, who had just had an attempt cleared off the line by Jordan Obita, was quickly onto the rebound and lashed into the side netting to break the deadlock. Or so it seemed. As the players lined up for the restart, it emerged that a possible encroachment was being checked by Dallas and his assistant David Room. The strike was duly disallowed. The Hibs fans, who were shoehorned into the corner between the Brunlawn stand and Sandy Jarton stand, rejoiced. Rangers supporters, meanwhile, vented their fury. Chants of F asterisk asterisk asterisk, the SFA, soon filled the air. But they could have no complaints. VAR got both calls spot on. If only the decisions could have been arrived at a little quicker. If at first you don't succeed, Tavernier's prowess from 12 yards out is such that Rangers supporters now start to chant his name on the rare occasions their team are awarded a penalty. But the right back's effort today was awful. He staggered his run up and fired straight at Marshall. No matter. He redoubled his efforts and scored the opener when he bulleted a header, well fished clearance in off the Hibs defender. It took his tally for the 2023-24 campaign to 22. The Englishman's attitude clearly rubs off on those around him. Nobody in a light blue jersey stopped breaking forward, tracking back or probing for an opening this afternoon. Tavernier slipped and fell flat in his face when he was taking a corner in the second half and gave the ball, which he only managed to move a few yards, away to Eliyuan. It was a bizarre, probably highly embarrassing moment. Not that it deterred him. He promptly teed up Dessers with a scoring chance his teammates should have buried. He was a deserved recipient of the Man of the Match champagne. Borna's back. The unspecified injury which Radovan Yilmaz picked up when he was away with Turkey during the international break saw Borna Barisic return to the Rangers side. The Croatian left-back had not started since the league meeting with Kilmarnock at Rugby Park at the end of last month, and he was hooked at half-time in that game with the visitors trailing 1-0. Yilmaz has enjoyed his most consistent spell of form since moving to Glasgow in a £3.4 million transfer from Besiktas in his homeland in 2022 of late. Barisic, meanwhile, has just not been his own old self. Could the 31-year-old, who is out of contract in the summer, get back to his best, help the horse record a vital victory, and increase his chances of being given an extension? He could have been better positioned at the Hibs goal, but he whipped in a couple of decent crosses to the Dizzers in the Hibs area. The striker got a header on target after rising to meet one of his deliveries shortly before he scored. But Barisic was replaced by Ross McCausland in the second half, as Dujon Sterling moved into his berth. Could the utility player be referred to him against Celtic? He played at left back in the Derby game in September. Injury boosts. Rangers' hopes of beating Celtic for the first time this season have been lifted by the return of a few key men from injury. Cantwell, who made his comeback from a hamstring injury later on against Benfica before the international break, played for almost an hour and did well in his favourite playmaker role. Sterling, who had been out for 3 weeks, returned to action when he replaced Scott Wright in the second half. Ross McCausland also took over from Barisic. Dessers made way for Abdelassima, the fee-scoring Senegalese forward who has been out since suffering a thigh injury, which required surgery at the African Cup of Nations in January, with around 10 minutes left. Clement now has an abundance of options. Hibs' heart. This result continued Hibs' dire run against Rangers in the Premiership. The Edinburgh club last defeated their Glasgow rivals in the league way back in 2018. But Montgomery's men gave their opponents a game today. They equalised in added-on time at the end of the first half, when Yuan supplied Maize and Malida, and always looked capable of levelling on the counter in the second. The tension around the ground was palpable until Matondo netted. Martin Boyle, who had been sidelined since suffering a concussion in the Scottish Cup game against Rangers in Leith earlier this month, coming on for Juran in the second half, drew a huge cheer from the away supporters. If Hibs can continue to play with the same intensity in the coming weeks, then they can secure a top six spot. And that article was written by Matthew Lindsay and read by me, Ian McKenna. From the Glasgow Times, Monday the 1st of April, from the sports section, Rangers manager welcomes end of strange old firm away fans lockout. Article by chief football writer Matthew Lindsay. Philip Clement has welcomed Celtic and Rangers reaching agreement over the number of away fans who will be allowed into Parkhead and Ibrox for old firm games next season, and admitted not having any travelling supporters in attendance had been really strange. The Glasgow Giants have been involved in a bitter dispute over the ticket allocations for the derby matches for months, and their first two cinch premiership meetings of the 2023-24 campaign were played out with only home fans inside the ground. However, the SPFL announced yesterday that the away team will receive 5% of the total capacity, around 3,000 at Celtic Park and around 2,500 at Ibrox, for the showpiece fixture from the 2024-25 campaign, and that has pleased Clement. Asked if he thought it was a positive development, the Belgian says, "For me, yes, for sure. I think everybody loves football with two sides of fans who sing against each other or sing towards each other, and to have this atmosphere. Nobody enjoyed the COVID period when there were no fans. That was really difficult. It was hard. For me, it was also really strange to play at Celtic Park without supporters for us. It was the first time for me and a strange experience. I think everybody, every player, every manager wants both sides in the stadium. Football is about that. It is entertainment from two teams. It is a positive thing for myself. Come on, Tadid. You're focused on your team and the game in derbies, but you want to hear them. You want to feel them. I'm sure the other managers want it also. It is part of football, part of our lives. You do it also for a big part for fans, to see them happy and feel the respect and the synergy together. I think it's an important thing, also for an atmosphere in a stadium, to have two kinds of fans in the stadium. Rangers, who are a point behind their City rivals in the Cinch Premiership table with a game in hand, will play Celtic at Ibrox in the third Old Firm game of the season on Sunday week, but the defending Scottish champions will not have any fans cheering them on in Govan. Asked if he was disappointed that the standoff could not have been sorted out sooner, Clement said, "No, I am not disappointed, because I know making rules you cannot switch things in one day. There is a lot of organisation about things and relocating people, because you bring fans in and all those things. I'm not involved in that in the club. I have enough jobs to do. But I understand that you cannot change this thing in one week. It is a very positive thing from next season, and it becomes a more normal situation." And that report was by Matthew Lindsay. From the Glasgow Times, Monday the 1st of April, from the sports section, Chris Sutton blasts Livingston versus Celtic embarrassment. Report by David Irvin. Chris Sutton has branded Livingston's artificial pitch as an embarrassment. The Celtic hero slaughtered the surface as he labelled the pitch a monstrosity. Sky Sports pundit Sutton pulled no punches as he admitted he would be glad not to see the pitch on the top flight. Sutton's comments came in the wake of Celtic's 3-0 triumph over Livingston on Sunday. Brendan Rodgers' side overcame a stubborn defence to claim victory and move back top of the Scottish Premiership table. However, the defeat left Livingston still rooted to the bottom of the table with just 3 wins all season, and Sutton wasted little time in consolation over Livingston's relegation predicament, with the club 10 points behind Ross County in 11th. Instead, the Celtic hero savagely remarked on the AstroTurf surface at Livingston Stadium and vowed he'd be pleased not to see it in the top flight should the club be relegated this season. On X, formerly Twitter, Sutton stated, "Very comfortable for Celtic in the end. Great news to see Hatate back and for Carter Vickers seemingly come through the 90 minutes. Livingston offered very little, and I'll be glad never to see the monstrosity of a pitch in the top flight again. It's an embarrassment." And that report was by David Irvin. That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Q&Review, and to tell your friends about our service.